introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And yeah, we're supposed to have the full crew here at some point, but you know, in a bit of a blast from the past, the Sexy Prince is somewhere en route, will be here eventually, ain't here right now, but we're going to get this thing going. QB1, my man, you sound a little bit more well-rested than you were the last time we had you on. How you doing, dude?
I'm good, man. I am a little bit more well-rested. You know, season's quickly approaching. I'm excited to dive into some Viking stuff today.
All right, all right. Wide receiver one. How's your Spanish, man?
It's getting good. My wife spending 3 years in Spain really helps me.
Good stuff. Good stuff. You're picking up on all the commentary?
Yeah.
Yeah. For background there, Miles is currently watching Teddy Bridgewater play in Spanish. I'm not sure why you're spending all this time watching the former Vikings quarterback play.
I know. I just got to get over it, right?
You really need to get over that. You need to get over that. But we're going to keep this thing moving along. We got a great guest coming on to talk about the Jaguars here. But before we get him on to talk about all that, to preview this upcoming game, you know we got to talk about it here. The GQ article with Jalen Ramsey. JR, man, when those quotes started coming out before the article even really dropped, and then after the article came out and you were able to go through the whole thing and really dig into, you know, the mind of Jalen Ramsey, but also his thoughts and his, I guess we'll say, courage. Or lack of word we can't use on the show to give his just honest, unvarnished opinion about basically every quarterback in the league. What were your thoughts about him as a player? And then just that article in general. I'll say I loved it. But what are your thoughts in general about it all?
I thought it was pretty entertaining. Some of it was kind of accurate, but it's pretty funny seeing like how other players really view other players from around the league that they go against, and it's something that we rarely get. We rarely get unfiltered answers from certain players, but when we get those unfiltered answers, people seem to complain about it when a player is truthfully honest, and that's exactly what Jalen Ramsey was. And that's not to say he was right about a lot of the quarterbacks, but it was just his honest opinion, and there was a wide range of variety from future MVPs to saying quarterbacks are complete trash. But I thought it was very entertaining, and he's sort of trying to be this generation's Deion Sanders like type of corner, a guy that's very elite and not scared to be outspoken, and he's quickly trying to ascend to be that type of guy. But I find it very entertaining, and I love players that are unfiltered and truthfully honest.
Man, I love that. And so man, you said he wasn't accurate on all of them. I felt like he was pretty close, like when you kind of broke down a little bit. Which one did you feel like he was most accurate on? And then which one did you feel like he was the furthest off on?
Well, I don't have all of them in front of me, but I think the one he was most accurate on was Joe Flacco. I'm not a huge Joe Flacco believer at all, and y'all know how I feel about Joe Flacco. I think, of course, he was a Super Bowl MVP, but he hasn't done much since he's gotten that award, whenever year that was, a couple years ago, a while back now, actually. But, and he said Kirk Cousins is a winner. I know that's kind of controversial, but Kirk Cousins hasn't really been much of a winner to this point in his career, but QB wins is not a stat. And I thought he was accurate about Carson Wentz. I think he said he was a future MVP, and I think he said Deshaun Watson was going to be a future MVP as well. If he stays healthy, I think both of those guys are capable of one day being those type of players.
Okay, and do you remember any of them? I know obviously you don't have it right in front of you, but any of them where you just read and you're like, come on, Jalen, like, what are you doing here? Like, which would, were there any of them where you just like, man, this is completely, completely wrong, just based on kind of where he fired it off from?
I think you said Stafford and Matt Ryan were overrated, and I think both of those guys are pretty good quarterbacks in the NFL, so I don't think they're overrated at all.
Look at that. You went. I like how you did that right there. You went ahead and calmed Miles down before he got on the mic. Because, you know, if you didn't go ahead and throw some love towards Matt Ryan, Miles is going to come in here and take over the whole rest of the show. But Miles, hop on in, man. I know that you have some thoughts about this article because we talked about it for quite some time. What were your thoughts about it in general? How do you feel about trash talk? And then I guess what are your thoughts about players just, you know, taking the things that obviously are said in the locker room right now and just, you know, being okay with saying them out loud so everyone knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the fact that we know Jalen Ramsey is who he is. This is the type of guy he is. He's not afraid to he's not going to shy away from his thoughts, his opinions. I like that about him. I like the cockiness. I love that aspect of a cornerback, or for me, any player that's a pro athlete, because you have to have confidence. Like, you need to be this confident guy. You need to be someone that knows you're better than the people you're playing against, because if you're not, it's going to be hard to actually be better than the players you're going against. So I love that mentality from him. I'm all for these guys speaking up and not doing it, so to speak, that coach speak, where they just say what they think the PR team and the coaches think they should say to be nice. Like, forget that. Like, go out and say what you feel. Like, what does it hurt? You know, like, it's not going to change a player or a team doing what they do against the Jaguars or Jalen Ramsey. I mean, he's one of the top cornerbacks in the league anyway, so they're not going to target him much anyway. So, I mean, it is what it is in that sense. So I love it. I'm all for it. I don't agree with the Matt Ryan observation or the Ben Roethlisberger one, for that matter. I'm not saying that Julio Jones doesn't make Matt Ryan better or that Antonio Brown doesn't make Big Ben better, but for the most part, we'll start with Big Ben. Big Ben has been doing his thing since 2003? So he's been doing it before Antonio Brown. He's won two Super Bowls without Antonio Brown. So I'm not going to put that, you know, not that, like I said, it's not that he doesn't help him out at all. Like, he does, definitely. But, like, Ben Roethlisberger has been good for a long time. Matt Ryan won an MVP. Like, to me, he's a top five quarterback. Obviously, Julio Jones, like I said, is going to help him out. Like, what is he supposed to do? Get rid of one of the best receivers in the league just because he needs to prove a point? Like, no, come on now. Like, that's always been ridiculous to me, the fact that these guys need to, like, they shouldn't, they can only play so well because of the players around them. Like, it's the NFL. Like, you're going to have really good players around you for the most part, for most guys. So, like, that's a good thing. The better players around, the more players you have around you that are good, the better. So, now if he's not playing well without him, that might change your story a little bit. But he hasn't really played much without him. So, it is what it is. So, I'm a big Matt Ryan fan. Jalen Ramsey doesn't have to be. it is what it is in that sense. Like, he doesn't have to be a Matt Ryan fan. Like, you heard him talk. Jalen Ramsey is funny because he said everything he wanted to out of his mouth until he talked about Blake Bortles. And then the second he brought up Blake Bortles, he went to coach speak.
Because he
has to deal with the dude in the locker room. No, I get it.
I mean, come on. Yeah, he's not going to go and toss his – you know, in practice he gives it to Blake Bortles. I feel like in practice they probably give Blake Bortles.
Like, because, like, I'm all for it. Like, you know me. I'm all for him saying his mind. Tell, you know, say it how it is, but, like, bro, like, he flipped that real quick once he talked about Blake Bortles. Like, and that's fine. Like, you do what you got to do, because you got to keep that relationship 100. But it was just funny to me.
Like, dude, wait for them to – once they trade for Teddy, though, it'll be all right. They'll figure it out. I'm with you there on, you know, the legacy achievements of Big Ben, but he might be onto something since Big Ben fell down and gave himself a concussion in practice.
Yeah. For
sure. I mean, Jalen might have been able to see the future.
talking about why he's not at practice, though, or what?
Oh, man. I figure, you know, we can speculate and all that stuff, but we have a great guest coming on who can hopefully give us the down home local takes on exactly what went down and why Jalen.
I have the conspiracy theory here.
Is here. So we'll let you ask about your conspiracy theory to get us going then.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll see if our man, our guest that will be coming on here shortly, Zach Goodall of Locked On Jaguars, will be coming to give us the information that we need to get us ready for this very, 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 very important preseason matchup that we have between the Jags and the Vikings. So give us just a second here. We'll be right back with Zach. And then right here, I'm going to be like, yo, we're going to go talk to our guest. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We found him. Computer updated, ready to go. Zach, how you doing, man?
Doing real good. Appreciate you guys having me. As you mentioned, you know, computers suck. They decide to update right when they absolutely do not need to. So sorry for the inconvenience on that, but glad to be here.
It's all good, man. We are glad to have you. And listeners, if you don't know, we have Zach Goodall on. He is the host of Locked On Jaguars. Where else can they, I guess, listen to your voice, read your work? As you said, you know, you guys are in a place, you long-suffering Jaguars fans are in a place now where, you know, it's fun to talk about the team. So I'm sure you got a lot of stuff out there. Where can we find your work?
You can find my stuff all at Locked On Jaguars. We have the podcast. We also have a website where we get a lot of content written and put out. Been covering the Jags with them for the past year or so. I originally came from Big Cat Country, part of SB Nation. Do a little bit of side work as well. Starting to cover some college ball on the UCF Knights, which makes me a big fan of Mike Hughes, as me and JR talked about on my pod the other night, as well as a little bit of work with the Orlando Magic on OrlandoMagicDaily.com. So be sure to follow along. You guys can pretty much find all of my stuff at Zach_Goodall on Twitter.
Oh, awesome, man. And again, thanks for coming on with us tonight. And I mean, I feel like you know what the first thing we want to know about here is, Well, not necessarily the article right away, but like, what happened? Why isn't Jalen in Minnesota?
It was complicated at first. The whole thing goes back to Dante Fowler, and it all is kind of a solid summary as to why he's not going to be back in Jacksonville after this year. They won't have the money to pay him whatever he thinks he's probably worth, being a guy who last year, despite being in kind of a schemed pass rushing role, you know, he had 8 sacks. He's a young guy, real athletic, a lot of potential that I'm sure a lot of teams would see in him that would be willing to give him some money on the market. But I don't think Jacksonville is in the position to pay him that. And another reason why they won't is his maturity issues. He's continually proving that he's not too much of a grown man considering where he should be right now in his career, especially in a locker room headlined by Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone. And the other day he started getting into a little bit of a fight with not only teammate, but position mate and a guy who took his starting job after his first career start in Yannick Ngakoue, the very, very flashy pass rusher that the Jaguars have had. Now going into year 3, already has 20 sacks to his name. And there were like 2 different outbreaks between them fighting in the same practice. Ramsey came up. He tried to break up the fight. He saw a reporter from the Florida Times Union, Philip Heilman, recording the fight and on camera yelled, "Turn that shit off." I don't know if we're allowed to curse on here, so I'm just quoting. That's all.
Yeah, you're good. You're reporting the news. You're reporting the news.
This is a family pause, Zach.
Yeah, that's my bad. But that, you guys can blame Jalen Ramsey for that. That wouldn't be the first time he's cursed on camera. But he says that it gets people kind of riled up. A lot of mixed opinions. A lot of people were saying Philip was doing his job. A lot of people were saying Philip should have been fired for recording that fight, which I don't really understand. But Philip continued to record it. He put it on his Twitter. And immediately after that, Ramsey came out and tweeted at him pretty much saying, like, you messed up. You knew you shouldn't have posted that. We've got a little something for you guys, and pretty much the media should kind of watch their back. Not as much a threat, more so, you know, we're not going to be friendly with the media. And I don't think the Jaguars liked that at all, because it was within like an hour he was suspended for the week, as well as Fowler for his role in the fighting. And that's why Ramsey isn't there. Love Jalen. Love how he just likes to mouth off. And you mentioned the article and that interview with GQ. Shows just how great he is when he's mouthing off. But I think this is really the slap on the wrist that will make sure for him to realize, you know, there's a time and a place to mouth off.
Okay.
Zach, hear me out here. I got a conspiracy theory on why Jalen Ramsey is really not in Minnesota this week. So hear me out on this. So Mike Zimmer, the Vikings head coach, has talked a lot about how they don't want, you know, how we've seen a lot of camp fights between, you know, teams that have had joint practices. Zimmer's been really adamant, even a few months back when he was talking to Doug Marrone about this and setting this all up, that they didn't want, he didn't want fighting. He didn't want any, you know, bad blood, any issues to happen. Just, he just wanted his team to get better, just like he wanted Jacksonville to get better.
Right.
I believe that they came to the point that they were looking for any excuse to tell Jalen that he couldn't come to Minnesota because they were worried that they couldn't keep him under wraps for talking shit, getting into scuffles. Cause you know, like we got Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs is the type of guy that's going to talk. He's not going to put up with that from Jalen, just like Jalen's not going to put up with it from Stephon. So I feel like they were like, hey, we'll look for any excuse to kind of keep him at home, make sure that, you know, we don't have any issues because he's one of those guys that, you know, is that wild card. Like, I love the way Jalen is, but, like, they wanted to make sure that there wasn't going to be any issues, no problems, and they know that Jalen's kind of that wild card that he might create that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Now you've really got me thinking. I think if it's coming from Coach Zimmer's perspective, it may not be as much about Ramsey because he's been in these situations before. I think he's done two joint practices with Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay has got some chippy dudes. There were some guys starting to throw fists with the Jags last year in camp. Notably, DeSean Jackson's one of those guys that you'd think that would go up head-to-head with Jalen Ramsey. I don't know if there'd be as much worry about Ramsey. I do think there would be with Dante Fowler, considering I definitely agree with you that this is Zimmer's perspective. Like, he doesn't want that type of drama, and that's awesome that he's really looking out for his team like that. Dante Fowler is more of the dude that will, whereas Ramsey will be a talker and physical on the field, Fowler just likes to go after people and cause fights because he was in the two with, like I said, his own position mate. On top of during the same practice in the middle of team drills, he also started going at it with like second or third string tight end James O'Shaughnessy. He's done it before. He's had plenty of issues with maturity off the field. That's why he's suspended.
Hold up. Yeah. Is Dante Fowler the same dude who threw that man's groceries into the water?
Yep. Oh, wow. That's why he's missing week one.
Okay. All right. Okay. I understand what we're dealing with now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a character. I'll tell you that. He right after the suspension came out, he put on I can't remember the name of the rapper, like Young Nudie or something. This is very Fowler like he's done stuff like this in the past. He goes on his Instagram and puts on his story a song by Young Nudie. I can't remember what it was. There are a lot of things in that song that I'm not allowed to say. But you could very much get a vibe. It was everyone's against me and I know it. He went on Twitter the next day and said they hated Jesus too. And he eventually deleted that tweet. But
man, that's a good tweet.
this is Dante Fowler for you, man. He's interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, Miles, maybe there's a little something. Maybe yeah. It's not Jalen. Maybe there's a little something to your conspiracy theory there.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Okay. All right. Well, next very, very important question that we have for you here is why haven't the Jags traded for Teddy Bridgewater yet?
See, I think that'd make a lot of Jags fans happy. I also think it'd make a lot of Jags fans mad because this fan base is still so split on Bortles. Because, I mean, it's not really seen outside of Jacksonville, and maybe it is because despite Jacksonville being such a big city, it is such a small city, like big area-wise, but at the same time, you know someone in every part of town. And everyone really looks into like the personality of their quarterback, and everyone loves Blake Bortles here. They might hate him on the field and demand that the team trade him, but they still love him just because he brings the mantra to the team of what everyone calls just that Duval character, like just an easygoing guy that everyone loves. At the same time, back in that 2014 draft, the fan base was split about 33%, 33%, 33% on Bortles, being the UCF guy, not too far away, about 2 hours away. Teddy Bridgewater, the most polished looking quarterback of the big three. And Johnny Manziel, because, you know, he's the badass that everyone wanted to bring swagger to Jacksonville after like six drafts straight in the top 10. So I think it'd make a lot of fans happy if the Jaguars were to have taken a flyer on Teddy Bridgewater. There were a lot of people calling for it this offseason when he hit the market. I just don't know what the Jets would want to get, like, what back for Bridgewater at this point. It might not be much, like, whatsoever. Darnold started their game tonight, but the Jaguars do seem happy with Bortles' progression at this point. They seem happy with their number two in Cody Kessler. He's only thrown the one interception since camp started, and that was today in the joint practices against the Vikings. So at that point, you know, Teddy's competing for a number two spot here as well. So I don't know if that's something that he would want or if the team would want to invest in at this point. But I mean, if they were looking for a number three quarterback, I'd say get Tanner Lee all the way up out of here and give me Teddy. I'll take him.
Competing with Cody Kessler? I mean,
I think Bridgewater is much better than that. I think I understand the risk factor with obviously his very unfortunate injury, but they do seem very happy with what they've seen out of Kessler so far.
All right, that makes sense. And like you said, the fan base, and I can see it. Blake Bortles, he's you know, he's a bro, and I can see that personality fitting in with that region. What are the expectations in terms of kind of an extension for Blake Bortles? And I guess if you were to throw some numbers out there, kind of guesstimate, what do you think that would look like for a Bortles-like quarterback?
Well, they did give him a short, not your typical extension this offseason. I mean, you see these quarterbacks getting paid like it's nothing these days. Like Minnesota is the perfect example of that. Kirk Cousins getting the first fully guaranteed contract, like that was a crazy deal. It's going to completely shake things up going forward for quarterbacks getting paid. Bortles got 3 years, 54. I think it was like something in the high teens to low 20s in guarantees. One of those bridge quarterback deals that you see guys like Sam Bradford or Tyrod or Mike Glennon when he signed with Chicago last year getting. So you wouldn't expect that for a guy that a team is so committed to. But I think it's a fair deal for both sides because Bortles wants to be here. It's not crazy money. It kind of brings things back down to reality because some people still live by the idea that quarterbacks are getting paid on a scale of how they play. Like, oh, this guy is, you know, he's probably the 8 to 10 range in terms of top quarterbacks in the league. So give him a little less than those top guys, but no one seems to really understand that this isn't about that. It's about if you think you have your guy, you're giving him that top dollar. Like when Derek Carr got paid a couple years ago and was made the highest quarterback paid quarterback in the NFL. I don't think anyone was even saying he was a top five guy at that point, but they were willing to give him that money because they thought he was the guy. So I think this kind of brings people back down into that reality of getting paid as you play. And Bortles seems to fit what they want out of their quarterback, and it's to not throw the ball that much, not have all the pressure on you. And I think that's probably what's best for him. They definitely didn't need to break the bank on him. I would have rather had Kirk. But I think it was a fair deal for both sides, and it's something they can get out of pretty easily, too, after 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, I completely forgot they gave him that money. And I'm looking at it, they gave him Case Keenum money. They basically gave him the Case Keenum contract with one extra year on it.
Pretty much. But yeah. That's the thing is that it was such a different deal than people are used to seeing. Like, not breaking those, like, records for how quarterbacks are getting paid, that it's easy to forget about it. Like, a lot of people, I'm sure, even in Jacksonville, probably still think he's on his rookie deal.
Okay. Blake Bortles got paid. Who knew?
Yeah, right. Yeah. What a time to be alive.
You know?
Zach JR here. We've talked about this guy a little bit earlier in the week, and there seems to be sort of a discrepancy about what people around the league think about him. They invested a very high pick on Leonard Fournette, the fourth overall pick last year. So what are just your thoughts on Leonard Fournette and his impact on the team thus far?
I think that he's changed everything about what this offense was trying to be for the better. And I'm not going to come out and say he's a top five running back in the NFL. Jags fans might say he is. And if they want to think that, that's great. I'm not going to put him in that bar yet. He's got room to grow. He can get there, but he's not there yet. But what he did, and I think a lot of people, especially, you know, when you look at PFF and they're grading him out and saying he can't, he's not elusive and stuff like that. We don't like him because he's old style. The Jaguars offense was originally like a vertical threat type of offense that took a lot of shots down the field from Bortles to Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Marquise Lee. They wanted to rely on speed down the field and guys that can just go up and get the ball deep. Bortles in return threw a lot of interceptions, a lot of mistakes, a lot of ugly football. And Fournette coming in into this Maroon Hackett style offense and Tom Coughlin's influence completely changed. The blocking scheme changed from a zone scheme to a power scheme. Fournette was it was probably one of the greatest press conferences I've ever seen. And just because this was such a short answer, Maroon was asked ideally how many times he wants Blake throwing the ball after they drafted Fournette. Maroon came back and he repeated it a couple of times, saying he ideally would want Blake throwing the ball zero times a game because he wants Fournette running the ball. And that philosophy turned into it changed Bortles because he didn't have that pressure on his shoulders anymore that he needed to be the guy. Fournette is the guy in this offense. They will continue to pound the ball with him. It's why they ran the ball, I think, on 49.4% of plays or something last year, the most in the NFL. And that has totally changed Blake's game. You're seeing a lot less mistakes out of him. He's still not perfect, and he's never going to be that flashy quarterback that people might want to see, or that game, like the in control, like put the pressure on me and I'll win this thing type of quarterback that you want to see out of the Aaron Rodgerses of the world and stuff like that. But he fits into this game manager role in this West Coast type of passing concept offense where they really do just try and pound the ball as much as they can, and teams are expecting it. That's why Fournette's yard and look past it in terms of the philosophy of what they're doing, how it's helping the passing game, how Fournette is taking on these defenders, so many of them at a time, especially with, in the past, poor interior blocking, which is going to change this year with Andrew Norwell in house. And all in all, I think this philosophy change has been incredible for the offense. And I think Fournette's just going to continue to thrive in it. And the offense can really be a two-way team a lot differently than we're seeing across the rest of the NFL right now.
Yo, JR, I know I joked about it a little bit earlier today, but I'm going to need you to go start throwing some footballs through the tire in the backyard. This man, they said they want him throwing zero times a game, and he got $26 million guaranteed at signing. So I'm gonna need you to get out there and start working out, my man.
You saw the divisional game against Pittsburgh. They ran the ball right down their throat.
Hey,
the Bortles didn't have to do anything but get out the way and hand it off to Fournette.
Can you still hand off the ball?
Yeah,
you still, man, got that footwork.
Yeah, I got that.
You okay, could be like
shotgun or under center, either one.
you could be like you could be like Chase Daniel. I mean, what, he thrown like 10 passes in the past 5 years and made like $40 million doing it.
Yeah,
great work if you can get
it. Zach, quick question for you. So, talking about offense a little bit, and you know how basically the team doesn't want Blake Bortles to throw the ball at all. Speaking of like receivers, though, how have the receivers looked so far in camp, and who stood out to you? And for me, like what's a guy like Dante Moncrief? How's he looked so far?
It's been something worth watching for sure, because you know I mentioned guys like Robinson and Hurns and Lee 2 years ago. Everyone and their mother in Jacksonville thought that Robinson and Hurns for the foreseeable future, and Lee wouldn't make it out of his rookie contract. All three of their rookie contracts are expired, and Lee is the only one left standing. So it was a lot of shake up this offseason, seeing them both go, seeing that second year guys, one of them being a previous undrafted free agent, and Keelan Cole and Dede Westbrook having to really step up going into their second year, adding Dante Moncrief and drafting DJ Chark. Totally different receiver room. especially for a guy like Bortles who's been so inconsistent. You're really hoping this doesn't mess him up. So far, it hasn't. I've seen a lot of growth out of Didi. I think he's really filling in for what Hearns was in a possession type of guy. You can trust him in conversion type of plays. Short to intermediate routes, he's really starting to grow and create separation and make flashy plays. Marquise Lee is the same as ever. He's going to be the guy that Blake trusts the most across the middle of the field. He's that guy that he can check down to no matter what. Dante Moncrief has been really limited. He was dealing with an ankle injury for about 4 or 5 practices, but before that and a little bit after that, you're starting to see him and Bortles connect really well. They've notably hit on a lot of corner routes. He's a guy that you're going to see a lot of work happening on the outside, specifically in the red zone area. I think you're going to see a lot of clicking there. Keelan Cole was kind of a deep threat last year, averaged, I think, nearly 18 yards per catch, which is close to top in the league, if not top in the league. But you're starting to really see a lot of the intermediate routes starting to develop. A lot of the short routes are starting to develop compared to this time last year. Like, you were only seeing him connect with, like, from Bortles on 9 routes. He would only be able to go deep. You saw nothing else out of him. So the growth all around has been really good. The most impressive guy to me has been DJ Chark. I don't know exactly what you guys thought about him coming out, but when I watched his film,
not a lot good.
Yeah, I saw a project. I saw intangibles. I saw a lot of cleaning up that needed to happen. I thought that his route tree was really shaky. He only had like maybe 2 routes that I thought he really could perform well. And I thought he could adjust to balls really well, but needed to do better separating, needed to be able to break into his routes a lot cleaner rather than just relying on speed. And I thought this could be like a 2-year project for Keenan McCardell. It was going to be his biggest project to date as the Jaguars receiver coach. And so far, he's been a star. I tracked some of his routes throughout camp. I don't have them all in front of me right now. I think, I had him at 16 receptions through camp, notably on slants, as well as some go routes that he really adjusted to well. He's able to break outside on deep routes, post and corners, coming across the middle of the field. Just pretty much everywhere that he's been targeted, he's been consistently separating really well. There were some reps that we saw with him against Jalen Ramsey and AJ Boye in one-on-ones where he mossed Boye. He was able to cleanly separate on a slant route against Ramsey and, you know, just beat him on a red zone fade route in the back of the end zone, which is not something you normally see against Ramsey. Ramsey's normally very physical at his point of attack, able to go up and get that ball, and Chark beat him, and Ramsey was very visibly pissed. So you've seen a lot of really quick growth out of him. He's been explosive. He's been consistently making plays. So I've been saying the entire offseason, you have absolutely no idea how the pecking order is going to go for this receiver room. But at this point, they've got enough guys there that it really does not matter who's their number one, because they all bring a lot of different things to the table that they're just going to have to find a way to get them all on the field.
All right, then. DJ Chark is looking good. That is not what I was expecting to hear. But, you know, other than DJ Chark, who are some other under the radar type players? DJ Chark, not so much under the radar. People obviously knew about him coming out of the combine. But who are some players that Vikings fans might not know about that will probably make an impact in the game when things get going?
Offense and defense?
Yes, please.
People know the name in Austin Seferian Jenkins, maybe more so because his DUI arrest that led to him getting the boot out of Tampa before his rookie contract expired. But since then, he has been vocal about that he's over a year sober, and people are wishing him absolutely nothing but the best. He's on a great track. He's really cleaned up, and he's gotten his priorities really figured out. He is going to be the red zone weapon that, if it's not Dante Moncrief, it's him with his big body at 6'6". He's easily the biggest type of receiver this Jaguars team has. He's athletic enough to go up and make plays. He's been making a lot of plays in red zone drills throughout training camp. A lot of, like, you know, go get the ball type of plays that Jags fans last saw it with Allen Robinson 2 or 3 years ago. And he's a guy to watch for. I don't think they're going to utilize him too much in between the 20s, but he will be a consistent red zone threat. So the Jaguars are normally pretty good. Bortles is normally pretty good in the red zone. In the past 2 years, I think he has 36 red zone touchdowns to only 2 interceptions in the red zone. So he's a guy that if they are able to move the ball well enough to get into the red zone, definitely watch out when he's on the field, because I think Seferian Jenkins will do a great job. You guys mentioned that, you know, missing Ramsey, why he's not in Minnesota. The dude that's filling in for him, I think, has been a, you know, not really picked up on too much. People aren't really noticing how much he's doing in this defense outside of Jacksonville. But journeyman Tyler Patman, last offseason in training camp, because Ramsey missed some time with an injury, but with the first and second team, Tyler Patman recorded 8 interceptions throughout camp. And this year, I think he has another 2 on top of a ton of deflected passes. He worked in for Ramsey while Ramsey was attending the birth of his child during the start of training camp. He'll be taking the first team reps opposite of AJ Boye. He's a guy that has a knack for being near the ball. Not too widely known. I forget what teams he was with before Jacksonville, other than I know he was with the Cowboys for a little bit. But he's a guy that I think is honestly going to be the primary depth corner, even ahead of DJ Hayden at this point. He could very well fight Hayden for the nickel spot. Apparently, that's still an open competition at this point. Casey's going to be this team's primary depth guy. He's a guy that Vikings fans should definitely keep their eyes on in the game, because he will be filling in for Ramsey, and I honestly think he's going to do a good job.
Zach, who do you have as like a surprise, a couple guys that, you know, you see as surprise cuts or potentially even trade opportunities?
That's a tough one. At this point, this Jaguars team is so unlike what it was in the past, is that, you know, every year people went into Jags camp with like, oh, here are 5 starting position battles that we're ready to watch for. And I think there might have, I wouldn't even consider there to have been a true starting position battle at this camp this year. People thought right guard would be, but there was never any competition. The coaches have had AJ Cans back. People thought Sam linebacker would be, and I guess that was the closest one to it, because there were a couple of guys getting Sam reps and just no one expected them to be there. But since day one, it's been Leon Jacobs, the 7th round rookie out of Wisconsin. So all in all, starting position battles of like there really haven't been any. So I don't really know if there's any guys that are going to come out and be like a shock cut or trade at this point. I think the Jaguars should field calls for Fowler, just because I don't think he's getting paid by this team. I don't think they're able to do it. They've got a starter at his position. I'm sure there are teams that are going to be desperate for pass rushers, even with a pass like Fowler's, thinking maybe they can groom him up. You immediately think of the New York Jets. They desperately need edge rushers. And I think that Fowler is a much better fit as a standing pass rusher who can operate in space as a 3-4 guy. I always thought he should have played Sam linebacker here, just based on his college film. I thought he was a much better fit there, because they play their Sam in an under front, kind of closer to the line. So if you can flip him into that 3-4 pass rusher, and you can start looking at teams like maybe Kansas City with an Andy Reid in-house, you know, hoping that he could take him on as kind of his project in this final year of his contract, maybe have him competing with Dee Ford, since Dee Ford has kind of gone back to what he was before his 10-sack breakout 2 years ago. I say you try and field as many offers as you can and see whoever is willing to give up the most for him. It just, you really got to see if any teams would be willing to give something up for Fowler. Otherwise, I don't know if there's going to be too many surprises.
Zach, just like we do with all of our guests, before we let you go, we have to get a season prediction. And do you think they're going to do better than what they did last year? And if you had to guess right now, what do you think their final record is going to be and how their season is going to finish up?
So I guess my answer is yes and no to if they're going to do better than last year. And what I mean by that is I think I've been saying this since the draft came and went, is I think they're going to repeat their record of 10-6. I maybe plus or minus one, but I do think that's what they're going to hit. But I think that's better than last year, because last year they had incredible injury luck. They lost Allen Robinson at the start of the season, and really the offense looked better than it had in years past. So I wouldn't even consider that to be something that bad. And now Robinson's gone. So that's just kind of, you know, how much are you truly missing out of him at this point? Other than that, I mean, the only two starters that are notable that I can think of that missed time during the year was Brandon Linder for maybe 2 weeks, Telvin Smith for maybe 2 weeks, and otherwise they were fine. The division was as soft as ever, even with the Jaguars being a much better team. Houston ended up losing Watson and went downhill from there. The Titans weren't as good of a team as their record says, even though they did beat Jacksonville twice. So I guess I can't really talk too much, but we saw that there were a lot of inefficiencies in that team. And that's why they made such a big shakeup this year, bringing in Mike Vrabel, replacing Mularkey. They're going to be changing a lot. And I think they're going to be much better this year with a better staff. I think Houston will be much better being fully healthy as long as Watt can stay healthy, Watson can stay healthy, all those guys can stay healthy down there. If Andrew Luck is able to perform even at half of what he was doing before he suffered an injury, that still makes him a pretty good quarterback because he really was one of the best in the league before he got hurt. So suddenly you're talking about a fierce AFC South if it can go the way that each fan base is hoping that they could go, which there's a strong chance of that happening. The Jaguars also have a much tougher schedule this year. They had one of the easiest in the NFL last year. And this year it gets much tougher. You've got New England, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got the Eagles. Like those three teams right there, they played Pittsburgh last year in the regular season, but you put those three together and that's harder than anything they had to do last year. So considering their luck with injuries, considering the division, considering the schedule, things are going to be much harder for this team this year. So if they're able to replicate what they were able to do on such an easy schedule and dice really rolled their way last year, if you get that repeated record, I'd still consider that to be a lot of improvement.
All right, Zach. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You have been a phenomenal guest. I can hear the years of repressed sadness that are just, it's coming through, like the happiness and the joy that you have with the Jags now being good. It just it's pouring out of you and it's awesome. It made for a great show. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for fighting through the computer issues. And you made it through all the questions we have for you, man. So I guess you can just get back to your evening of enjoying all of this excellent, excellent preseason football that's currently on the television.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate you guys having me on. I got to say the same thing to you guys because I know the Vikings have had a little bit more ups than the Jaguars have, but I can't pretend like everything was perfect. And now suddenly things really are starting to look that way, with Kirk Cousins being that cherry on top. So same thing to you guys, hoping for the best for the Vikings going forward as well.
Well, all right. We'll meet in the Super Bowl and figure this thing out.
That is right. I'm ready.
Let's do it. Well, thanks, man. Have a good night, dude.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you. You too.
Please hold. Please hold.
All right, guys. Zach was a great guest. A lot of great information there about the Jaguars. Obviously, you know, this is a very, 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 very important preseason game that we have coming up here. Can be tough for the team to top, well, the first team anyway, to top what they did last week at Denver. And, you know, we haven't been on since that game. So I figure we just talk about it real quick, talk about a couple of things going on, you know, in Vikings camp, and then we can get up out of here because it is getting late. So, JR, from your perspective, I know you did a little mini breakdown I saw on Twitter there. I guess, give me your thoughts, break down the Denver game for me, and I guess, yeah, top to bottom, what were your big takeaways from that game? What were the things you liked, didn't like? You know, are we going to the Super Bowl? I mean, Kirk Cousins, he was almost perfect, so I feel like we're going to the Super Bowl, right?
Right. I like how efficient the offense looked early on. And the biggest thing that everyone wanted to see was how the offensive line would perform. I thought they did a really good job run blocking, creating some lanes for Latavius Murray, creating some explosive runs. I think he had two runs of 20-plus yards, so it's really good to see him break out like that and them to answer some questions early on, especially considering that they were basically patchworked At this point, we all had questions about the interior guys, and I thought most of them performed well for the most part. That was really good to see. Brian O'Neill was another pleasant surprise. He held up really well in pass protection. But
say it again, yeah.
I know that's your guy. Brian O'Neill is your new puppy.
He's my new guy, you know. He's graded better than Hernandez, too.
Me, wow. Both.
Wow. Crazy.
He had a good game. He held up really well in pass protection. He had some struggles in the run game, though. You saw his lack of strength show up from time to time, got pushed around a little bit. But you see his athleticism really show off when he's asked to climb to the second level and latch on to those defenders. I thought Rock Thomas played really well. He stood out. He had some explosive runs and some explosive touchdowns as well. On the defensive side of the ball, I thought they played extremely well. The first group was really good. They made Paxton Lynch look like who we all thought he was. And that's a guy that's really struggled to live up to his first-round status. Just going back to the quarterback situation on the other side of the ball. With the Vikings, I thought Kyle Sluter played really well, and he shined. I thought he played much better than what Trevor Siemian showed. So those are just some of the things that stuck out to me.
Okay, and Miles, from your perspective, you know, JR gave us his general feelings, thoughts on the game. Who was your favorite, or what was your favorite performance that you saw overall on offense? And now, obviously, same thing for defense. Who were the standout players for you when you think back to the game?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it too. I mean, Brian O'Neill's definitely up there for me, just because this doesn't mean that he's like 100% ready to be a starter for a full season, whatever, but he's definitely a little more polished than I think we expected him to be. I know this idea that he was really raw and a project, which, yeah, he's definitely had some growing pains, you know, through the offseason work and everything like that and up to now. But I think he's definitely been a lot better and adjusted a lot quicker to the game, the NFL game, than I think a lot of people expected him to as well. So he's definitely up there for me. Then I really thought, obviously, Rock Thomas was great. He did everything he wanted in a running back three, and I think what the team's kind of looking for anyways. Chad Beebe was another really, really good player that stood out. He ran really good routes, created really good separation, and he had really good chemistry with Kyle Sloter. So I think those are probably my top three guys on offense. And then on defense, Eric Wilson, I think he's probably impressed me more than any player that I've seen at camp so far in terms of second year guys or guys that were on the team last year that didn't really have an impact on their respective position. That guy's been really, really good on defense and flying around the field. He's been so good to the point that I wouldn't be surprised if he's cutting into reps from Ben Gideon in base defense. And if he's you know, not already the third linebacker off the field right now, so on the depth chart. So that's how good he's played. I can't not talk about Mike Hughes. I mean, that dude just unreal. Like, I've been a huge Mike Hughes fan, and y'all know this, but like, it's everything and more. Like, this dude just phenomenal. Like, his hips, he's not afraid to get dirty in the run game. His ability to track the ball, he's a ball hawk. He almost had that interception, which I know that play is a little up and down for me in terms of his positioning and everything, but like, he attacks the ball and he wants the ball. He doesn't want the dude in front of him to win. He's a dog, man. Like, I just love the way he plays. And then lastly, I mean, you could kind of toss up just the interceptions and stuff from guys like Jack Tocho and Anthony Harris. But overall, I didn't think either of them played all of that well. But yeah, I thought the game was good. I thought, you know, the team did what you'd like them to do in a first preseason game. And circling back to Brian O'Neill real quick, I'm really in that sense that if he keeps progressing, what does Rashad Hill do, and what are Rashad Hill's weaknesses that Brian O'Neill like couldn't do for the reason for him not to be the starter over Rashad Hill? And I say that as in, like, we know Brian O'Neill's weaknesses. Like, yeah, he's gonna get there's gonna be some bull rushes and stuff that he's gonna have to learn to have a better anchor, but like, you see guys get around Rashad Hill with speed you see guys bully Rashad Hill. They'll bull rush him too. And I know he's a little bit – he's stronger than Brian O'Neill is right now. But, like, the ceiling for Brian O'Neill, in my opinion, is so much higher than it is for Rashad Hill, even this season, that, like, there isn't anything that Rashad Hill does that, like, in terms of, like, needing help from, like, a David Morgan, you're like a chip from a tight end or a running back in pass protection, that, like, why not give Brian O'Neill that opportunity and let Rashad Hill be that swing tackle? So that's just another thing I've been thinking about lately.
Yes, JR, why not? Because I know you feel differently.
Well, I mean, I agree with Miles. I think his ceiling is much higher than what Rashad Hill's is and is going to be, but he just doesn't have the strength right now. And I think, yes, he's more athletic than what Rashad Hill is, but Rashad Hill has the experience and he's a bit more polished than what Brian O'Neill is at this current point in time. But I think later on down the road, probably about midseason, I think we can start to see him turn into that type of starter that we want to be at right tackle. And that's not to say that he can go in and start for the back half of the season if the Vikings are fortunate enough to make the playoffs, step in right away and perform well in those games. I still think they need to redshirt him this year and just see how Rashad Hill performs. And, I mean, if he steps in there, he outplays Rashad Hill, that's great. He ends up turning into an asset for the Vikings. But I just don't think he's ready right now, despite what he showed last week against the Broncos.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a perfect segue for me there. I guess, you know, going into that game, obviously, you know, everyone was terrified that the offensive line was just basically going to get, you know, destroyed, and, you know, Kirk Cousins was going to get, hurt or something because we couldn't block anyone. And generally throughout the game, everyone came out feeling like the offensive line really across most of the teams played admirably. I know that it's just preseason. I know it's just one game. I know that we have a much bigger test coming up this week against the Jaguars, but I guess, do you feel any differently about the offensive line now that you've seen some of these guys in live action? Like, what are your thoughts on, you know, a guy like Isadora and kind of his development? Because I know you were a fan of him, you know, coming out, his development based on, you know, where he was in that game versus, you know, where he was the last time we saw him in live action. Or, I guess Avion, depending on, you know, which podcast I'm listening to, Collins, and him playing all over the line and playing, you know, pretty well from what you could discern off the broadcast. I guess, are you feeling better now that you've seen them in live action, or is it still too early to tell?
I think it's still too early. I think this game is really going to be huge for all of those guys because the Jaguars are very deep on their front seven. We're going to get a good feel for exactly how good or how deep this interior Vikings offensive line is. And they're going to be going against really, really standout guys. You know, Calais Campbell, Marcell Dareus, Taven Bryan, the list goes on and on, Dante Fowler. And, I mean, the Jaguars are so deep, especially on the defensive line. So we're going to see how they match up. And if they get overwhelmed by this ferocious Jaguars defensive front, I'm really looking forward to see how they stack up to the challenge of this defensive front.
All right. Last topic. And, you know, listeners, I'm sorry. It looks like I lied to you earlier because I said Saxy Prince was going to be here later. And it's looking like that's not going to happen. So the first thing we were going to talk about is, you know, his thoughts on day one of practice, because he was there, but we're not going to do that because he's not here. So I'm just going to ask you, Miles, first, and then JR, you can bring us home. What, if anything, has stood out to you on kind of the coverage and the reporting that you're hearing coming out of the joint practices thus far? Miles, go ahead.
Just sounds like the Vikings offense hasn't, they've had their ups and their downs, obviously, but sounds like there's been a little bit more down than up. Today there was a lot of offensive line shuffling, so you can only imagine how that went against the Jaguars defense. And then defensively, you just hear that the Vikings are doing everything they normally would do. Young guys are stepping up and playing well. Some of those defensive line rotation guys are looking good. And then obviously Mike Hughes has been the standout for the most part the last couple of days too. So, and Stephon Diggs is breaking ankles. So.
As expected. JR, anything standing out from you this far?
It's kind of been kind of quiet to me. There really hasn't been a whole bunch of things that have stood out. And, I mean, a lot of people have been saying this and that here and there. But I know Arif highlighted the struggles that Kirk Cousins has had in a two-minute drill. So I'm interested to see if he's going to get a chance or if he even plays that long. I doubt he does, but if he gets an opportunity to run a two-minute drill at some point in the preseason just to see how he does and if he adjusts to those in-game adjustments or if he gets a chance early on in the season, how he adjusts, and maybe we can come back to what Arif was saying about how he struggled during that, doing that in training camp.
All right. All right, that's it. We made it, guys. We made it. Last thing, JR, anything that we should be on the lookout for you? Any, I know that, you know, it is a busy time of year for you, but any appearances that we should be plugging? Any work that anything that you're writing? Anything in the hopper? Anything on the go?
Not right now. I was on Purple for the Win with Andy. That's up right now, so go check that out whenever you get a chance.
All right. And Mr. Gorham, what have you been up to? Feel like you got another spreading the wings, spreading the good word.
Yeah, I'm trying to do as much as I can. You know, lots of other things going on right now, but trying to put together some recaps and everything like that, or, you know, just jumping on podcasts. I was on a podcast this evening, actually, earlier this evening, with Sports Crunch Pod, podcast out of Chicago. They do great work, so check that out tomorrow when that drops.
We will definitely do that. And when this episode drops, JR's spot on Andy's podcast will already be live, and I will probably, if someone reminds me, maybe try to go back and update these show notes. The pod's not up now, but then just go ahead and subscribe to Purple for the Win, and then you'll get it when it comes out. But I'll also update the show notes after it goes live so that you can check that out as well. Miles, same. When your pod goes up, I'll make sure that we get those notes updated here and that we'll tweet it out from the Climbing a Pocket account so that you can listen to Miles spreading the good word. Other things you should definitely be checking out. We're super excited, thrilled to be partnering up with the Scolgers podcast. Their first episode on our radio station dropped on Tuesday, and they will be holding down every Tuesday going forward. Good Morning Gjallarhorn with David and Drew will be coming up on Saturday. If you haven't listened to the last episode, that's also available on YouTube, and it's available on the podcast station. They'll have a new episode coming up this Saturday as well. Flip Mossy's got some stuff on the go for you that'll be dropping probably Monday. So a lot of stuff, a lot of great work coming up. And Pocket Protectors, we'll stop slacking off and we'll get back here. Pull Eric away from all the work that he's doing down in Cincinnati for PFF. And we'll get another episode recorded for you guys here before too long. So a lot of great stuff, a lot of great work. A lot of people joining the team over here, Climbing the Pocket. As we said on Twitter, if you want to, you know, join the CTP family, slide in the DMs, let us know, and we'll see what we can get figured out for you. But listeners, that's it. We made it all the way to the end. Thank you for sticking with us. As always, I'm your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Joined this evening by QB1 and wide receiver 1. QB3, nowhere to be found. But we made it all the same. Gentlemen, y'all have a good one. Listeners, we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.